on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The Defense Department is not keeping track of all the senior officials who leave for jobs with contractors. Now, Congress requires those officials, including flag officers and generals, to get written legal opinions before moving on. Lots of paperwork. But at DOD, the Inspector General says the database that tracks the moves is incomplete. In this week's Legal Loop, we turn to Steve Ryan, head of the Government Strategies Practice at McDermott, Will & Emery. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
So, Steve, let's just start by, I know this is a complicated task, but to try to make it simple, what are the laws on moving between government and the private sector? When can you do that, and what sort of things do you have to think about?
Well, it's always a blessing to have senior military or civilians leave government and go to the private sector. It's good for all of us that that flow of people goes back and forth. And on occasion, too, senior executives from industry go to government in important roles. So that's an important activity. However, it is highly regulated, both in general, in Title 18 in the Criminal Code, and in specific procurement sections like Section 847 of the National Defense Act. There are different restrictions on different groups of people and when they can move. But the bottom line is, if you were substantially responsible for something in government as a high government official and in a position to award a large contract on it, then generally you can't side switch into a position where you're helping compete for that same award. That's the core of the revolving door law.
So basically, it's anything that you've had direct contact with, the possibility of that conflict of interest prevents you from moving on.
It's not that it prevents you from moving on, but it prevents you from being involved in that. And the words that we use are personally and substantially. That's sort of the catchphrase that would mean that you didn't just have the contract within your command, but you had to actually touch it, feel it, and be involved with it.
What's the transition process like, and how long does it take, and how much of this paperwork is actually involved?
Well, there's a designated agency ethics officer in all components in government where you can go and get a letter that will describe to you what the designated agency ethics officer believes are the restrictions that apply to you. And we encourage people to do that. Actually, in the private sector, we also do that for our companies. We'll write a letter about a general or an admiral that's leaving to the company and give very specific instructions about what the areas are that they can be involved with and what the areas are that they can't. And you base that on an interview. You have to interview the officer. You have to look at their resume, and you have to talk to them before you do the letter. Some of the DAO letters are very useful. They're very precise. They're very clear. Others have a tendency to just take a letter off the shelf that's their cookie-cutter letter and cookie-cutter it a little and give it to the person. That's less useful. And I've seen really good letters written by designated agency ethics officers and less useful letters. The controversy right now is about how to capture those letters when they're written on the government side.
Well, and getting to this Inspector General's report at the Defense Department, and you can only imagine that other agencies might be having similar issues. It seems like it's really a question of record keeping, that these letters, whether, I guess, from the prospective employer, from the government, aren't necessarily where they're supposed to be in a database, so that if somebody is coming and going and then coming and going, you might not know about the first go around. So how do agencies overall keep track of all of this?
Well, historically, agencies didn't make any effort to create a central database of these activities. And I think the HASC in particular, the House Armed Services Committee, was particularly interested in seeing that such a compilation occur, particularly with regard to the revolving door law that dealt with procurement officials. And the procurement officials are defined there as people who are involved in procurements of more than $10 million and were flag rank or SES or senior executives, in essence, in the government. So for that group, there was a hope that a singular database would exist where all of these letters would then be accumulated. The report reflected that that hadn't occurred, and it's not a surprise. I mean, the United States government is a lot like the former Yugoslavia. There's Croatia, there's Serbia, there's, Kosovo. You know, it's different pockets of places, and the fact that those letters are not being accumulated is perhaps not a surprise to anybody who knows a large bureaucracy like the Defense Department.
We're speaking with Steve Ryan. He's a partner in McDermott, Will and Emery. Steve, overall, have employees gotten into, or former employees gotten into trouble because even though they got all the letters and they left, there was then sort of this conflict of interest or where they crossed that line where they shouldn't have?
Well, there are from time to time allegations that a senior officer, you know, is side switching. Now, for lawyers, it's very easy. You know, you're involved in United States versus Ryan, and you know whether you're involved in that case or not. It's simplified. For an officer in charge of a procurement command, the notion of what they've been personally and substantially involved with is always subject to an evaluation. On occasion, there are bid protests that allege, for example, that somebody had information from a source evaluation board or helped write an RFP and then left before the RFP was awarded and is involved. And it's not career enhancing to lose an award at a contractor because you side switched. And so this is not an issue that I think has been as historically important as it once was. I think people are much more sensitive to the conflict of interest impression that's created by somebody side switching. And, I haven't seen that much of it in recent years that would indicate this is really that significant a concern. The law we're dealing with was passed a number of years ago, and they're looking at the implementation of it. It's really an offshoot of the Procurement Integrity Act that was passed in the mid-1980s and early 1990s and has been fiddled with along the way. So conceptually, this is an issue that we've had with us for some time. It has been looked at pretty carefully. The creation of the DAOs and all of that activity has already occurred. So I think, you know, this is not the worst area of government procurement.
But to clarify what you said, or perhaps to sum it up, I mean, basically right now it is up to the contractors, the companies, to police themselves, to use their judgment so that their employees who are former government officials don't cross that line. Or it is up to their competitors in bid protests to raise the issue. But as the agencies, the Defense Department isn't really aggressive in trying to follow these things through on its own.
No, I wouldn't create that thought, Emily. I may have misspoken if you got that. The Defense Department has a requirement that people who are covered by the statute have to get a letter before they leave. And that letter has to be on the government side. It doesn't matter whether there's one done on the contractor side. So it's that requirement that already exists on the defense side that sums up that there's a responsibility on the part of the official that he can't avoid with regard to this ethics activity. I think the contractor side polices itself as well because they don't want to run into a situation where there's an allegation that the senior official brought them specialized knowledge that they were not entitled to.
How long does this sort of touchy careful period last? Is it 1 year, 5 years, yeah, a lifetime?
So it's interesting because there's different conceptions in the law. In the criminal law, there's time periods. It's sort of time bars are in it. You know, there's 1 year and 2 year time bars. The personally and substantially language bars you lifetime from those things that you're involved with personally and substantially. Now, the next contract award is not perceived as the same contract award. So it is a singular event. But if you're personally and substantially involved and it goes on for 5 years, then the bar might be 5 years rather than 5 months, which it could also be. And so the length of time gets a little squirrely, and that's why there's room for lawyers and ethics officials.
All right. Well, I just want to ask you for a final word of advice for anybody who is a contractor looking to move into the government or government looking to move into contracting but not doing it yet. What's the thing they should be thinking about now?
So a lot of people like to hire former senior officials from the Defense Department, and that's a great thing, and you ought to do it. But you need to know what limitations they have when they come. So in the hiring process, you want to ask them, do they have a designated agency ethics letter that describes what their blockouts will be when they leave. And you want to review that letter and see if it's adequate and perhaps supplement it on your side. And that's really an important practice ethically for contractors. And it's important, by the way, for the general or admiral or senior executive that their company actually cares about ethics that way.
Steve Ryan is a partner at McDermott, Will and Emery. And Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Emily.
We'll post this interview with a link to that Inspector General report. You'll be able to find it at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. It's 6:35. Still to come on Federal News Radio, if Congress...